What a weird start to a podcast. Do you remember when Brian Harvey got run over by his own car because he ate a potato?
Hi, I'm Steve Rick.
And I'm Tim Elliott.
And welcome to the RE of Marketing podcast.
A podcast where we rethink, replay and remark on all good things to do with branding and marketing.
Hello, Tim.
Hello, back again.
Back again. Back again.
What's that? Take That song with Back Again in it.
Take it back, wasn't it?
Oh, was it?
Back for Good?
Back for Good. We're not back for good. We're only back for a little bit, actually.
So yeah, not for long.
That's one of our favourite intros so far. I didn't Take That would come into it.
Like that. I was an E17 fan myself rather than Take That.
The size of the coats that got me, or the guys were very small. I don't know which one it was.
I can't believe what a weird start to a podcast. Do you remember when Brian Harvey got run over by his own car because he ate a potato?
No, I don't.
He had too many baked potatoes and got run over by his own car.
That was very good. Charlie, if you're listening, for the people who are listening, leave this in, please, is our editor. But start it, like the cold intro, as... Do you remember when Brian Harvey got run over by a car? That would be ideal. Thanks. Anyway, on with the show, people.
I feel sorry for the show note writer. Trying to find the Daily Mirror news column on that item.
Yeah.
Anyway. So today, we're in Series 2, Episode 4. And today we're going to be joined by somebody I've known for quite a few years, Fleury Amorette. I think it's Amorette. Forbes and Martin. Yeah, like the biscuit, but yeah. But perhaps not, I don't know. Fleury, I've known for quite a few years. Met for the first time about 6 years ago. But over the last 2 years, she's actually just become... she started working at a company called Studio Republic, based out of Winchester. She also founded the Saffron Society, which is a marketing collective created for those who want to live consciously. But while she's been at Studio Republic, she's now a board member there, as well as their business and growth director. They were intrinsic in the 2.6 challenge during COVID, which was the biggest ever collective fundraising campaign to help save the UK's charities. Because we all know charities really hit during COVID times. Studio Republic were a part of helping them out during that. The 2.6 challenge was for anybody to raise money in either doing 2.6 or 26 of something. And within those couple of months of that, well, within that month that it ran, they raised £11 million for nearly 4,000 charities.
Because the 2.6 thing came because of the London Marathon, right?
Is that That's right. Yeah, it's completely why it came about. Wow. And then just recently, they were also the people who did the digital creative on the London Ride 100 thing, which I was supposed to be doing this year for the third year, which got cancelled. But they took it online and helped take it all online. So she's going to be really insightful. She really follows her passion, which I love about Fleury. You know, all about empowering causes that directly impact lives, all those different things. So fingers crossed. It's going to be an awesome conversation.
Awesome. I look forward to it.
Cool. Hello, Fleury.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Tim.
Hi.
You all right?
Yeah, good.
I know we've just had this conversation off mic, but let's have the conversation again. Are you feeling well? You all good?
Feeling well, all good. Around. The Earth is being particularly round today, which I'm
yes,
enjoying.
Yes, yeah, good. Yeah. I've just ordered a new cabinet off Wayfair. I don't know what's going to turn up, though. Honestly, don't know what's going to turn up.
They're really pricey for a reason.
Anyway, very funny.
Leave that in, Charlie. Leave that in.
I won't be baited for this.
It would be a shame that Tim didn't record it. We could have had that as an outtake episode later on in the series, but yeah. Never mind. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate it. We wanted to get you on because of all the things that you've been involved with and how you like to get involved with causes that directly impact people's lives and how you have that real purpose driven element to your work. And
yeah.
I find that so interesting. Actually, I admire it. I look at people like you and go, oh, let's all be Fleury one day. Let's just only do things that we like. And also, you know, just with what's been announced over the last week or so, where you've been, you know, put out as one of the top 30 under 30 from Bournemouth University.
Yeah, what a privilege. I feel slightly robbed, because I feel like an awards due isn't an awards due unless you have at least a bottle of wine inside you. Yeah. However, I'm extremely grateful for that. I guess it doesn't feel totally real, because when it got announced, I was just sat at my dining table, as with any other bit of good news I've had in the last 6 months. But yeah, super cool. Super, super cool.
It's good to be on the list, though, right?
Yeah, it is. But it's just words, you know? I'm just doing my thing. Other people are doing their thing. And obviously, I've kept in touch with so many people from uni, and I know there are so many other people in my course, let alone my year, who are doing incredible things. So I guess there's always like a bit of imposter syndrome with anything like that. I know that's super overused, but it is. But, you know, aside from all that stuff, yeah, I'm really proud. And it's something that my mum.
Do you still do stuff with the university then, Fleury? Or is it just something that they recognise since you've left? Or
no, it was actually one of my old colleagues saw that they were doing this thing, and she said that I should go for it. So I got my MD to write some nice things about me with a knife to his throat, and then made it through, made the cut.
Well, congratulations anyway. I think accolades are awesome, aren't they? I still tout on about the one that I won 10 years ago. So
what was it?
I can't remember now. Something rubbish. What was it? Marketing Campaign of the Year.
That's a big one.
Yeah, it wasn't really, because it was only for like the region. It wasn't like a national one or anything like that.
He omitted the regional part of that award. See, this is what marketing people do. This is a good segue. Because you can dial up the importance and dial down the importance of anything you want. You just have to omit little bits of information. I'm not going to go, it's not fake news, but it's slightly bendy news.
That's completely right. That's why I added in the regional bit at the end. It was called Marketing Campaign of the Year, but it was for the Chamber of Commerce at the time. And it was a rebrand that we did.
Okay.
And I didn't class myself as a marketer at the time. So it was really strange. That's what made me a marketer.
I've got something to confess to you.
Go on then.
While I was at my previous agency, we had a really good year at business. And our MD basically decided that we would all go away on a trip for our Christmas party.
Yeah, I saw that.
And we went to Madrid and we had a lovely time. And obviously we're a team of designers, so everyone got their cameras out and we got some beautiful photos. When we got back, we thought, you know, nice bit of local PR, stick a few photos in the Bournemouth Echo. That would be nice. And off the back of that, I think it was the Daily Mail was the first paper to pick up the story, basically call us to say, we've seen these photos, we love it. Tell us a bit more about the trip. How old is your MD? How much did you spend on the trip? And obviously Daily Mail the hell out of it. And it became Britain's best boss. Flies team out to Madrid for a luxury stay. They did this, they did this. And it went viral. Every single national newspaper, Lad Bible, international radio, it was on BBC 4 Drive Time or something. Absolutely enormous viral campaign off the back of us sticking a few pictures in the local paper. But I did a little bit of bending with that truth, because we were also recruiting at the time. And so we went in for a prestigious industry award as a best PR campaign, saying that we were trying to recruit. So we did this like big viral piece to attract attention, and we won. We won the award.
To be fair, I would have sat there on that judging panel going, right, so the cost of recruitment for one person is usually around £5,000. How much did it cost to take everybody to Madrid?
5,000, actually.
Yeah. What's a better way? So anybody listening, if you want to recruit in future, just take people on holiday. Don't think about...
And you get to go on holiday as well.
I remember seeing that in the papers. And then I also remember the year after that it got picked up again when it was the party on the beach.
Yes, the summer. I think that just went into the Echo that time.
Is that just going to the Echo?
I was there, so...
Oh, you'd left by the way. Anyway... Yeah, we can bend the truth as marketers.
Yeah,
Always been the truth.
Not too much, eh?
One of the things that you've been involved with over the last... Since you went to Studio Republic, you started there about 2 years ago, is that right?
More or less, about 2 years
ago. Yeah, yeah. And one of the things that you've been involved there over the last... Well, over the COVID period is the 2.6 challenge stuff.
Yeah, that Just, was...
Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, gladly. So it was right at the beginning when all the announcements were coming out, and I was actually on the edge of furloughing myself alongside my MD, thinking, you know, as a dedicated new business function in an agency, it doesn't look very... well, the future looked a bit bleak. And at the same time, a sustainability consultant who's a friend to our business just said she was working with a group of mass participation organisers, including London Marathon and the Great North Run and a load of other big names in that space. And they were thinking about creating a campaign to try and raise funds for all the charities that wouldn't be able to have their fundraising events. I think London Marathon raises like over 60 million for charities, yeah, just that one event. So obviously you can imagine the damage it's doing to the charity sector, all the events cancelled or delayed for the foreseeable future. So they got together and had this mission. We want to do something. We want to raise as much money as we can for as many charities as we can. And we were introduced right at the start by this amazing lady. And we were fundamental to helping them shape that concept and deliver it through creative and branding that we thought would create a load of cut through. And fast forward to April 26th, which would have been the 40th London Marathon, which was the date of the campaign. And the UK just ran to it. They loved it. And we raised over 11 million. I think it's 11 million, 100 and something thousand for over 3,900 charities in the UK, just out of a team effort from our side in delivery and national effort from Joe Public to just have a go, have some fun and do some good. It was such an amazing, it seems like a million years ago now, but it was one of the most unforgettable projects I've ever worked on in my career, for sure.
Did it give you goosebumps that you think about that you've helped raise that amount of money for?
Again, it's kind of like a bit of disbelief. At the time, we were obviously watching that counter like a hawk. I couldn't think about anything else. The first thing I did when I woke up every day, never mind Instagram, that was second in line. It was straight on the side, how much we raised today. So I think at the time it was like, oh my God, we've just passed £1 million. £1 million. And now it's just like, yeah, badass. What an amazing thing to say I've contributed a small part to.
And is it going to carry on into next year as well?
We hope so. So a load of the kind of key delivery team members have formed a kind of board of directors. So it exists as its own company now. We absolutely want to do more with it. It's, now that people know about it, in theory, it would be a lot easier to implement again. So watch this space.
Cool.
I think there's going to be a lot kind of continued over from this phase of COVID times. Like, and I think there's a lot of like charitable movements and connection, people feeling, I don't know, maybe a lot more kind of empathetic towards charitable causes than they were, maybe. Like, because you've got...
It's just more visibility, isn't there?
Yeah.
Of the challenges. It's given everyone a lot of time to stop everything that they're doing and take stock of the things that matter, which we've all experienced at home, you know, avoiding the commute and such. Captain Tom, obviously, yeah, raised a staggering amount with that little routine in his garden for the NHS. And then the NHS, you know, became an enormous focus for all of us. I think
they're making a movie about him now, aren't they?
Are they?
Yesterday morning, yeah, they're making a fully fledged Hollywood movie about his life.
I mean, it's amazing.
I was going to say, if it was a movie about that thing, it'd be quite. God bless it, but 4 hours have been tootling around the garden.
Well, have you ever seen Phone Booth?
Yeah,
that's one of my favourite films. I love that film. 2 hours in a phone booth.
I take it back.
It's a good film, is it?
I really enjoyed that film. That was a really good film.
I might watch it later.
I think I have that on DVD somewhere for those Gen Zers who don't know what DVD is.
DVD. I don't think we have a disc drive in our house.
No, I got rid of all mine years ago, but I think I've still got a PlayStation that still plays them somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, I think anecdotally, in my own experience and in friends and family, I think people are much more aware, much more keen to help, much more keen to give. I've probably given more to charity in the past year than I have in the previous 10.
Yeah.
To be honest, you get the big issue here and there. Someone stops you in the street with one of those ridiculous buckets and you kind of do what you can. But I've made a conscious effort because actually the other thing is, which is counteracts it, is that I'm not going out all the time. I'm not going out for dinner anymore. I'm not going out on big nights out. And that's where I'd spend my money. So I can justify it to myself kind of financially as well. I think everyone can more.
I think the really good thing about the 2.6 thing though was that whole... anybody can do something that's 2.6. Anybody, like a young child through to Captain Tom Moore, anybody can do 2.6 yeah. or something. And that's what really encapsulated that movement of people.
Sure. And it was off the back of Tom Moore's effort. It was to say, you know, let's make this as accessible as humanly possible. So in a lot of the early ideas that we proposed out to people, it was anything from running 26 miles to doing 26 shoulder shrugs. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't matter what the mechanism was. I guess not everyone would have seen all of the thousands of ideas that came across, but a few of them we had. There's a lady called Sophie who swam, I think it was 26 miles, on a kind of elastic band attached to her back in a pool in her back garden in her swimsuit.
Wow.
We had a rugby player, I think maybe he was from Bath Rugby, who obviously was shielding or kind of locked down at a farm, and he did 26 press-ups with different scales of farm animal on his back. So a chicken, rooster, baby pig, baby goat, dog. So that obviously got a lot of attention. My old man is a mixologist, and he did 26 cocktails in 26 minutes. To the delight of my sister and stepmom, who had to find a way to get rid of those cocktails afterwards. But yeah, we had, I think there was one that was like a little, honestly, a brand new newborn who just did 2.6 minute naps surrounded by teddies. You know, it doesn't matter. It wasn't about competing for anything. It was purely about like self-expression, creativity, and it allowed... the everyday public to choose a cause that mattered a lot to them and to find a way to gain support through their network by doing something that they knew would entertain or move the people close to them. That, I think that was kind of the mechanism that was the genius part about it. It wasn't about us. It wasn't about the campaign. It was just giving as many tools as possible and as much freedom as we said would be successful for people to make it their own.
What's really interesting, because that idea came from the London Marathon and their 26 miles and them not being able to do it. But you put in this, it's almost rapid problem solving, isn't it, is what you've done.
Yeah.
Is you've gone, that's not going to happen. Therefore, how do we do the London Marathon virtually? But actually, how can we make it more inclusive so everybody can be a part of this?
Yeah, that was it. So we worked backwards from the goal, which was as much money as possible for as many charities as possible, because that was a problem we needed to solve. And so the best way to do that wasn't to launch something that no one had ever heard of before, completely cold, but to basically start with, you know, all of these mass participation organisations already had the network of the charities that they wanted to support. So everything was designed around creating tools to give to the charities for those charities to reach out to supporters they already had. So in that sense, the primary focus was activating existing communities. And then off the back of that was the fame and the creativity and the fun of seeing that happening that inspired people that maybe weren't in that kind of from that charity universe to do something anyway. Some of the guys who I was boxing with pre-COVID, three of them did 2,900 burpees. In a day, it was horrific. I think they really struggled to walk for about a week after that.
No.
Them.
Oh,
Right, Steve, we'll pencil it in, we'll get our session in next. And they obviously had charities that they wanted to support, but for them, actually, the campaign was a chance to do something fun and challenging, and then they supported their charities off the back. So it was create a framework through which there are some rules to play the game, but give enough flexibility that people can make it their own. And that striking that balance, I think, was absolutely key. And just coming back to what you said about rapid problem solving, you know, timing, we had literally no time. I think it was like 4 weeks or something from the first conversation to launching it nationwide. The players in our team, obviously London Marathon, had an enormous impact in terms of press, because they usually have that spot to talk about the marathon. Now they had another interesting story to replace it with. They went out through their networks to get some kind of celebrity support, athlete support, because they obviously all had their own charities as well. And yeah.
Do you think that's important? Do you think that press angle's important on yeah, something like that?
Absolutely, I think it was. If London Marathon hadn't been kind of co-founder, really, of that campaign, I think we would have struggled to get the reach because we didn't have the budget to spend on paid and advertising, whatever else. But yeah, they had the network and the connections to kind of give, to basically give the press an incredible positive story to talk about in amidst the sea of doom and gloom. So that was, it was absolutely critical for sure. And the celebrity engagement obviously helps with reach online. Although I think maybe we slightly misjudged the importance of everyday person video content creation versus celebrities, because celebrity stuff was amazing. You know, it's fab to say you can put these household names against it, but it was the everyday people and some of the ideas I've just shared with you that are absolutely mad. Some of them, you know, people with really, really severe physical disability, just being able to take a few steps. You know, these are really powerful moments, thousands of these really powerful moments. And I think we're almost more inspired by other people, every folk, everyday folk like us, than we are by Dame whoever. But a mix of the two kind of played different roles for sure.
There's an interesting comparison there. I saw, like, in the wider media scape or content scape, there was a bunch of content around that same time that was all like really bland and samey, and pictures of forlorn streets, like empty streets, and soft, like slightly depressing music, and then all this cool, like human-centered content, you know, like with real stories, with real people sticking on it, that was good. And I think that's, you know, it's probably why that stuff kind of stood out, really, because it's got some depth to it. I think in COVID was the first kind of real challenge I've lived through. I'm 43, right, and it's the first one that has, like, physically affected my world. I know there was depressions and stuff, but I think I was too young or too drunk to mind at that point. But this was the one that's had the most effect, and I've seen, you know, I've seen that, like, a lot of people who are very transactional, very shallow, very unthought through, less purposeful kind of content and missions and companies and stuff just be, like, ignored and forgotten and disappear compared to the ones that have some depth. I mean, we've talked about it before, haven't we, Steve, about how purpose and story adds depth to a thing, to either a movement or a product or a service or a brand or an event or an experience or whatever. And it's, I think that's what, fingers crossed anyway, will continue out the other side of this thing whenever that is.
It's reprioritization of everything. As individual, as humans, we have had to take a look at everything. Our relationships, our living situation, our life, our work-life balance, which Rick and I were chatting about before, Rick. And yeah, you know, you just have hopefully concluded, most people have concluded, that they were giving too much time, too much energy, and too much money to things that didn't matter. That's a hard truth about it.
I think one of the, you know, when we look at COVID and that situation, and people wanting to get involved with a movement and become attached to something. Because that's what people, it's the tribalism, isn't it? That's what we're talking about. There's a tribalism to the 2.6, there's a tribalism to the Tom Moore giving, there's tribalism to COVID even.
Yeah.
We've been anchoring after something that we can all be tribal with anyway. So if COVID hadn't have happened, we were already being tribal around climate change, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people who are really buying into it now, and it's not just the younger generation. There are, you know, I know you're big for it, Fleury, as are I like to think that I'm big on it, but I'm not on, you know, the scale of my daughters or even yourself. Mm. But we're all starting to go, we want to make things better.
Yeah.
That's what I get a feel now. As a society, we're all going, we've had enough of the fastness, we've had enough of fast fashion, we've had enough of plastic, we've had enough of killing the climate, we've had enough of not talking to the people on the bus or on the train, yeah. We've had enough of the big corporate supermarkets. We just want to go back to something that's a little bit more community-based.
Yeah, a bit more of a wholesome life.
Yes.
You mentioned the significance of the clap, the weekly clap for the NHS.
Yeah.
And how wonderful that was to come out and stand in the street and actually look your neighbours in the eye for potentially the first time ever.
I looked at the one on the right-hand side, the left-hand side I didn't.
Is that where Tim lives?
Yes, where Tim lives. We're like the Ant and Dec of the podcast world.
You're Ant.
I am Ant. I've got the bigger forehead. No, you've got the bigger forehead. Come on. Yeah. But I think, yeah, that whole clap thing was really poignant.
It's a community feel. So where our MD lives, it's kind of Southampton way, for the 2.6 challenge, that little street, there was one guy on the street that did a marathon distance up and down the road. So it became an event for their street. And they were out there every day kind of supporting him. But I think some of the kids on the street made kind of bunting and road closure signs and stuff like that. So it's something around which to... build community and build relationships and share in moments in lovely things when everything else seems to be falling down around you. We reach for those moments, don't we?
Yeah, I think you hit on a good thing there as well. Like it's definitely felt very micro community now. Like before, like in February this year, February 2020, like all my life happened outside of this house that I'm sitting on now. Like I worked out there, I went for meals out there, we took like family trips out there, like everything was away. Do you know what I mean? I'm not like here was where I slept and kept my stuff occasionally. and that's totally flipped. And if it's flipped, like for me, now my community is this little cul-de-sac I'm on with the five people, you know, that are neighbours, that are classed as neighbours that I, you know, I drove past occasionally in the morning if they were up at the same time. But that, I think that micro community, I've seen people, like just people, on my friends on Instagram, like our friend Paul Ince, who runs a company who edits this, like he was out on his estate doing, they were very big for the NHS applause thing and support thing. And he was out there like storifying that. But it was, people were stuck in the micro communities for, I don't know what, 3 months, four, maybe. And I think that's a it certainly never happened in my lifetime before because everything else was out of my house before. Mm. So that's interesting, I think.
I think one of the other interesting, like when you give that example of Paul there with, you know, trying to storify what was happening on his cul-de-sac or his estate or wherever, is people's ambitions changed when they were doing that. They weren't doing it for reach. They were doing it to document something that is happening that everybody's going through, and that's why those things work now, because you're not trying to do it to drive attention, you're doing it for yourself so you can help other people understand. And I think that's a real big shift in marketing culture.
Yeah, isn't it a shame that even needs to be a shift? It kind of sounds ludicrous.
Yeah, it's a real shame that it's got to be a shift, but that's where a lot of marketers or people who class themselves as marketers are all about reach, gain, you know, clicks, all these different things, rather than actually just doing something that's good.
Well, I guess, you know, it's not that we at Studio Republic are not thinking about reach, engagement, visibility, but the question is why? And if the why is because I'm trying to make a bit more dosh, then, you know, whatever. There's 100 other companies that can help you with that, but that's not what we do. That's not why we as a group of people get up, get out of bed and go to our dining table to work to achieve anymore. And I was saying to you, Steve, like, once you've seen behind the curtain on some of these things, you know, it's difficult to go back. That's the same with work. That's the same when I became vegan 3-4 years ago. And for me, significantly, this has been an educational journey around anti-racism, which has not been on my agenda or radar at all. Hands up, it has not been. It's never something that's affected me. Obviously, it doesn't affect a lot of white people because we have a privilege born into our skin colour. But it's been a shocking, emotional, and empowering time for me to understand more about that. And I've done a lot of reading and had a lot of interesting conversations since then. So, you know, COVID has been awful for so many people. We've lost people, lots of people have lost people, but I really feel like I have made the most of this time to really concentrate on what the F I'm doing here and what kind of legacy I want to leave behind. And I guess I didn't think I would be thinking about that before the age of 30, but I think it's kind of good to start as early as you can, really.
There's definitely a move to that. One of our first guests, a guy called Michael Owen, who's a old ad agency guy. Well, he's not old. Sorry, Michael. But, you know, he's an old agency guy. I've said it again. Screw it. Right. But he was one of the first online events I went to and listened. And he asked the question, like now's the time to ask, like, what are you for? Like, what are you actually for? Like, I know... like a bunch of us do work that makes us money because we need money to be survived. But what are you actually for? Do you know what I mean? What's the difference? And I've had the similar thing at you know, 43 years old of going through that and trying to unlearn a bunch of stuff because, like, I'm the Black Lives Matter and the racism front, right? It's never obviously affected me as a you know, a middle-aged white guy, but I've also never considered myself prejudiced at all, like at all, like I've not even thought about it, if you know what I mean. And I've had to unlearn that. I've had to unlearn what work means. I've had to unlearn what values I thought I had, which aren't actually the values I had. But there's been a massive period of kind of unlearning, like, you know, like, which in itself is learning, not to go down that rabbit hole of weird. but you know, but I think, like I say, because we've been such in small little clumps of our world, like in our own little worldview, if unlearning's happening within the people I can see on the Zoom screen, do you know what I mean? It must be happening en masse, I reckon. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And so hopefully that, more, I don't know, do we become a more collective conscious, which is why big movements like the ones that you did happen? I don't know.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, depending on how spiritual you both are, you know, Power of Now and Secret and all those kind of books and spiritual teachers will say that we already are one kind of consciousness. Whether or not we are tapped into that or not is another matter, and the influence that we can have on it is another matter, because we must be kind of in control of that and be making purposeful effort to bring in the positivity that we want in our lives. And we're having this conversation again the other day. I'm a big fan of The Secret. I don't know if you've read it before.
I've watched the Netflix version.
Yeah, that's good. Actually, anything that's audiobook or videos is usually a priority. I've got an audiobook, so I don't really I fall asleep if I read. But yeah, that was a massive game changer. I don't think about it all the time. I go through days or weeks and sometimes even months when I don't feel that great, and I forget that The Secret even exists. But then you pick it back up again, you think, ah, let's just try this. Like, let's try the magic of manifesting goodness. And you know what? Whether or not you believe it's for the reasons they explain, sometimes it works. So who cares?
Yeah, it gives you that different perspective on situations, doesn't it? I mean, I know you, Fleury, you're very much a glass half full type of person than half empty. So, but there will be people out there in marketing world, not in the marketing world, who will be glass half empty. And actually, if you look at just flipping that and being half full, that you see more positivity about. I remember years ago, I read a book by Danny Wallace called Yes Man.
I read that. That was brilliant.
Yeah, it was brilliant. I was a massive fan of Dave Gorman and Danny Wallace. I've been to see their book. I've had book signings with them. You know, I'm a bit of a geek around them. But Danny Wallace just decided to say yes for a year to any situation.
Everything, yeah.
Absolutely everything. But it took him on a completely different life journey. He met new people. Whereas if he'd just said no, he'd have just continued doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And I think the secret on the energy level thing is a very similar type of thing. It's about opening your mind into the positivity rather than just saying, well, I'm not going to achieve that.
Yeah. And I think that's important. Going back to the kind of professional theme of this is that right now it'd be so easy and so normal and totally understandable to just kind of panic or continue to worry if things aren't going right. You know, I work on new business. Sometimes we win stuff and sometimes we don't. And I always find it a personal experience. I think I always will till the day I die. But what you do with those successes and those failures, every single moment has an impact on what comes next.
Yeah.
And I think if you go into each day, each meeting, each strategy, thinking, we're going to do the absolute best we can, I'm going to stay positive, and I just trust that it's going to be okay, then surely that's got to have a better result than going and thinking, we haven't got a chance, I just don't think it's going to work. It's got to affect everything, the way you communicate, the way you hold yourself. You know, we are physical beings. We might not be in the same room, but we're communicating through video conference calls more than ever. And people can still see, you know, what you're about, if you believe in what you're doing, if you care. This is all important stuff that we don't spend that much time thinking about because we're just busy getting on with it and worrying about what's coming next.
It's true, though, isn't it? You have a conversation with somebody over the phone and you can tell if they're not quite right. If you know that person, you'll go, are you feeling all right?
Yeah, of course.
You can feel it through voice or through video or what have you.
Yeah.
It's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a good TV advert I saw early days. I can't remember what it was for, but it was a lady with a massive scrunchie. I can't remember what the company was for. That went and like dreadlocks or something, but a huge, biggest scrunchie I've ever seen. And I've got no hair for people who've not seen it. It's like huge. Like every scrunchie is massive for me, but this is not one. And she said, you know, she was recording a video for her older self or something. And going, like, and how are you? Like, I don't know if you remember now, but when we ask how are you, we actually mean it now. Like, it's not, and it was such a good advert. And I kept, it's like the only one I've seen in 5 years, obviously, because of fast forward. But it was really good.
Doesn't have adverts like that.
Mind you, depending on the format in which you film a video, you might not, it will be the equivalent of a VHS, right? Like, if I filmed it on a video cassette now, in like 20, 30 years,
the evolution, the evolution of formats is crazy when you get into it. Absolutely crazy. So, it's Studio Republic. Do you only do, obviously, the projects that you enjoy, you get the most from, is from purpose driven things, isn't it? So, is purpose a key driver to the company?
Yeah, that is the absolute fabric of what we do. We wouldn't touch a project unless it had a meaningful impact. That's basically the rule of thumb. So we work with charities since our very beginning. I'd say probably 80% of our client portfolio is charity-based, but we work with commercial organisations, educational, environmental, who have a kind of purpose-oriented, CSR-oriented, impact-oriented project. So everything we do is around making a meaningful impact. And that's how we can stand in front of people as experts. That's how we get better at creating meaningful impact. That's how we recruit, because it's people come to us not just because they're a designer and they're looking for a job, but because they need purpose. They've got the, you know, they've gone on their own journey. They've done some great work. They've done the commercial. They work for the big boys or the big agencies, and they've concluded that that is not enough to satisfy them as a human. And that is what our team is. We all exist to make a change, a positive change.
And because you've got that like-minded people there, is your, I take your culture's quite good at the organisation as well, because everybody's on that same plane.
Yeah, I've only been here, as I said, about 2 years, but it honestly is quite difficult to remember now what it felt like not to focus purely on positivity in that way. I've always enjoyed work, and I've thrown myself into everything I've ever done, but it's just completely different. Like, you are connecting to your work and your clients in a completely different way. And you can't, you don't expect it until you start doing it. Every conversation, every team brainstorm, every, oh, I've seen this, guys, I've seen this news article, whatever, it's all 100% positivity and reinforcement. That's my debt. That's 5 days a week is just that. And I just, yeah, there's no way I'd ever be able to go back to normal, in inverted commas, work after that. Just can't. Why would you?
Yeah, we have that conversation quite often, don't we, Tim?
We do, yeah. Yeah, it's difficult to, once you've seen the light. But we were talking pre-recording about people having their eyes opened to a better, more purposeful thing, weren't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, it must be difficult. I mean,
Tim. I was just going to say, I don't think many people actually take the time to even figure out what they care about. So in our team, okay, charity is a big sector, right? But as individuals, we all have specific things that we really care about. I'm vegan. I care enormous amount about issues around animal cruelty as well as sustainability. And that, you know, that affects everything from what I wear, what I wash with, what I eat, etc. We have members of our team are from LGBTQ+ community, and they obviously would love to work on kind of addressing inequalities. Some people care about otters and want to protect otters. We got a project in last year which was extremely meaningful for me, which landed in our lap with the National Deaf Children's Society. And I'm not deaf myself. I don't actually have any members of my family that are deaf. But when I was a little girl, I learned the alphabet at Brownies. And I gave it to my dad, and he ran with it as a hobby all the way up to becoming a translator. And so when I was growing up, he would go to kind of weekly deaf club because he just had a community of friends that he could communicate with in that way. And then I got back into it again at college, and it was just like, I loved having this completely separate part of my life where I could communicate in a way. I was always absolutely atrocious at language at school, but sign language, different part of your brain. And totally understand the, you know, sense of isolation that a lot of deaf people can feel in society, let alone with these bloody masks covering people's faces so they can't even lip read anymore. And when that project crossed my desk, I know, as much as I put my heart and soul into everything, I poured myself into this project, and we won it. And I'm so, so proud that we've had the opportunity to work with lots of deaf young people to kind of co-create this online experience for young people now. Absolutely phenomenal. But, you know, how much time do we take to actually figure out what matters to us? I don't think many people even know.
No, I don't. And I think, you know, another good thing to come out of the last few months is the ability to pause, even if it's just for the hour a day you were commuting, right? You gained an hour. Like, and time is time, isn't it? Like, I used to spend a minimum of 3 hours a day on the M1, which I've not had to do for ages, which was amazing, which has been great, right?
And it's, you only went 5 miles in those 3 hours.
Of course, yeah. Sometimes I didn't even get to the M1 in that time, but, you know, thanks to the junctions I'm near. But it's, you know, now I've got a different practice. I get up every morning. I'm on day 250 53 of yoga in a row, I think.
Congratulations.
Wicked.
Good job.
Yeah, it's good. But, and it, one of the best things is talking of noticing stuff that you presumed were good, you know, like in the secret sort of way, right? I've been doing breath work classes and I always thought I could breathe. I thought I got it down, if I was honest. I thought I'd know it. But being taught to breathe like three times a week is like a different level of thing. Now I'm consciously conscious breathing is a whole different kettle of fish. Like, it's really good, but I feel, you know, conscious about, as many people do, it's about a lot more stuff. As about climb, it's always been on my radar, but now I'm definitely more consciously aware, and as are, you know, kind of just societal needs, just local society needs, you know, community needs.
Yeah.
I was, you know, I've lived here for, I don't know, 10, 11 years or something. I know two people before lockdown. Like, one of them lives with me. She's married to me, in fact. It's a different, like, it's changed so much stuff for a positive, I think. And it has been, you know, it's reflected in, like, the 2.6 stuff, I think, en masse, is proof that there's a change, a good change in people, I think.
That consciousness piece, I just kind of thought of something in my head there. I think, depending on if you view it as like an interest or a hobby or a lifestyle change, you know, things like being vegan or committing to yoga and breathing or learning about the difference between being anti-racist versus I don't think I'm prejudiced, right?
Yeah.
I think we're sort of moving into a period of time where, regardless of where your education and interest and knowledge was on all of those sorts of things, everyone has looked at most of those sorts of things en masse and realised that if we just all took a bit more responsibility for those things, supporting charities, you know, love thy neighbour type vibe, if, you know, it shouldn't be some people's hobbies, it should be everyone's agenda, because the outcome for everyone is a better life, is a better lifestyle en masse.
Yeah.
I've been reading a lot into a charity called One Campaign, which is supported by RED, another really famous global organisation. And they are looking at the difference between addressing our COVID problem in the UK versus addressing the COVID problem globally, and how we as kind of countries continue to look after ourselves in isolation, the global problem will just continue to perpetuate it on a mind-blowing scale.
It's always quite frustrating, isn't it, when the government announce, "Oh, we've secured enough vaccines for the UK because we're high up on the list." And you're sitting there going, "What? Well, that's great, you know, but also why? Just because we have funds, whereas Uganda doesn't, why should we get first bite of the money?"
Absolutely horrific imbalance, and this is where you really, you know, again, you become conscious of your privilege. You kind of just don't notice those things because you tick along very happily in your life thinking, I work hard, I'm a good person, I sort of deserve these things. But I think it's every single person's responsibility, especially marketers who influence others, about the imbalances and inequalities and how that affects the people outside of themselves.
That's brilliant. I saw actually a really good video from the United Nations. It was released, I think, this week, maybe last weekend or something, called... I've just put it up on YouTube, called Nations United, Urgent Solutions for Urgent Times. And it's got like Tandy Newton and Forrest Whitaker and the guy who was in Iron Man, but the plain one. I can't remember, but it's back. Can't remember his name. but had the big cyborg legs thing. Very cool. But there was him, and but they went through everything that's happened in 2020, like COVID, and then the fires in California and Australia, which were the worst ever, and then Black Lives Matter, obviously, and then played a bit from his brother's speech, George Floyd's brother's speech at his funeral, and stuff like It's like a 15-minute video. I'll put it in the Zoom chat, which is no use for the podcast people. But it's like, it was such a powerful reminder of Jesus Christ. Stuff has happened this year.
Yeah.
Like, if COVID hadn't happened, it would still be a pretty rough year, like in global periods, right? And it's important that if there's a for marketers, for creative people, for people with a voice or ability to broadcast stuff, that we broadcast the, you know, that we educate people as well as entertain them, right? That we inspire people to action and challenge people as well as inform them and just tick their normal customer needs, right? I think there's a whole, we've got a responsibility, if that's the right word, maybe.
I think that's the perfect word. I think it is a responsibility to educate.
I think if you basically need to start recognizing that as a marketer, you are by default a person of influence. You are an influencer, whether or not you choose to wield that power or not. And your customers can also be activists. Some of them are. Some of them just need a bit more information and to, you know, kind of trigger that compassion to understand, you know, their potential as a consumer. Everyone has a responsibility in the mix. But, guys, we got way off here. I can't even remember the last time you mentioned work. Do we need to?
It's pretty fluid, this podcast.
And we're I love it.
On number 11. But
I told you it was a chat, Flurry. It's
you weren't wrong, Steve.
No. I think it's some really important point that came through there, though, is it doesn't matter if you're marketing for your own business or you're marketing for your organisation. You do influence other people's decisions. So you have got to know, you've got to not even have a viewpoint, but you've got to know everything that's going on so you know what's happening inside other people's heads. Yeah. Because you could say the one wrong thing or the one right thing to make somebody go in the right or wrong direction.
Yeah.
There's a flip side to that, right? There's if you have the ability to market, to put other people's and other organizations' voices out into the world that will influence people, like, is it time as a trade, as a creative people, to look at the sort of stuff we're putting out? Like, should we go, well, actually, this company is a bit ropey. I did a funny ropey face there for the video. But you know, that I don't really agree with these values. Should part of our brief or proposal process be interviewing them about their values and their stand on Black Lives Matter? Like, because if they don't care about Black Lives Matter, whether it directly influences them or not as a business, shouldn't it? Mm. Like, not just that, but everything. Climate, sustainability, you know, their local community. Like, what good are they doing? Should we, as the people who put the voice out, go, actually, I'm not helping you shout about this thing? Because...
Stand by your own principles.
Yeah.
Before you talk about others.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what SR is. Yeah. You know, we got our B Corp certification last year as one stamp to prove that we really are walking the walk. And every single day, we're making that choice. Sometimes that means we don't get as much income as we want, but it doesn't matter. We don't, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it shouldn't matter that much. So I think the more agencies that do that, the better. The more clients that do that, the better, for sure.
It is funny how money ruins everything, doesn't it? Money ruins everything. And the people who I find most inspiring and the people who I look up to and see as mentors or as people I want surrounding me in my life are the people who don't think about the money, never think about money. So Michael Owen, who was on the first one, he doesn't care about money. You know, Tim, you don't care about money. Florrie, you don't care about money. And these are the conversations that I prefer to have rather than people who just have money.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a big believer in if you do good work, you'll get paid for it or rewarded for it, let's say. Because I don't think pay is the reward for every piece of work that should happen. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm a big believer in fulfillment or pride, right? How many marketers out there are proud of the work they've done? Jesus Christ. Yeah. Like, I've spent 23 years as a marketer, and I could, honest to God, cancel 20 of them out, probably, for not having worked that. But not that it wasn't any good, or I didn't, you know, the clients weren't happy or anything, but having that depth to it, it's probably didn't make any difference. Yeah. Like, really?
It's when it aligns with your values.
Yeah.
Then you actually really genuinely feel it, even if it's only a tiny bit of impact, a tiny bit of a difference. It matters because you believe it matters. And that's the difference. All the other stuff will fall by the wayside. You won't even remember.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. I think there's a call to arms in there somewhere.
Mm.
Podcast.
Join the revolution.
Join the revolution.
Yes. Viva la revolution.
Badge. I want a badge.
A sustainably made badge, Tim.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Woven, ideally, out of grass that's died naturally, something.
Sounds good.
Which is good.
Right, well, I think that's it. Thank you very much.
I'll just do one shout out, actually.
Yeah, of course.
Time for that. So, as we've said, Studio Republic's been going for nearly 18 years now, B Corp certified. We're focused on making an impact, and we work with charities and purpose-led organisations. We have been riding the wave through COVID, and we're proud to be heading in an even more exciting direction than we have before. We've got a fantastic team of superstars and lots of opportunities for progression, and we are currently searching for a developer to join our team to help build some of these bespoke digital experiences with us. So if you're interested, give us a look up, studiorepublic.com, and we've got our hello@studiorepublic.com email. If you want to get in touch, please do.
Awesome. Thank you. And where can people find you, Florrie, if they want
to? LinkedIn.
LinkedIn is what?
The moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep, that's where I'll be. absolute addict. There aren't many Florries on LinkedIn, so you should be able to find me pretty easy. But just copy my name, stick it into Google. I'm on various channels. Always welcome new connections, for sure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Great fun.
Well, that was awesome. That was a deep conversation, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah, she was a brilliant guest, Florrie, and she does brilliant work, brilliant human, and I think our conversation was important, not to blow our own podcasty trumpet, but that was an important conversation, and that's what we're here for, right? Rethink and remark on and rediscuss stuff, because you've got podcasts out there that will talk about marketing-y stuff to marketers about how to do marketing better, and this isn't that, I don't think.
No, that is big tick goal, isn't it? You know, that is, if you've listened to that and it hasn't made you rethink about some of the things that you are doing or have done or are planning to do, then go back and re-listen to it again and just pick out some of those things that Florrie talked about and try and understand them and understand if you're making the right decision on things. That for me is exactly the type of thing that marketers should be doing day in and day out, is thinking about those bigger subjects, bigger ideas, and how they can make a bigger positive impact in the world.
Yeah, definitely.
So until the next time.
Until the next time, TTFN, people.